Number five. The Hearing Committee report. I'll turn it over to Frank Blount.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, everything's behind tab number five. The committee met on March 25th in Portland, Maine, to work and approve the draft scoping document and then forward it to the council for today's meeting. Since then, the Herring PDT met on April 9th. The Herring advisors will have a meeting on April 30th. The committee will have its next meeting in mid-May to start reviewing the scoping comments. There will also be a scoping meeting in conjunction with the Mid-Atlantic Council at the June meeting. It will be in one of the evenings. The committee worked on the goals and objectives, and that will be in the document. We worked on the catch monitoring, the ACL, the accountability measures, the filleting of herring at sea. Oh, excuse me. That wasn't there. Sectors and laps. If you turn the scoping document, I'm going to turn it over to Lori. She can go through the scoping document. The committee's got a total of two motions. I'll explain those when we get to them. And for now, if Lori's ready, I'll go right to Lori.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to try to keep this pretty brief. I just want to kind of walk you through the draft scoping document. This is a document that we worked on at the committee meeting, and the committee has forwarded it today for approval so that we can begin the scoping process on this amendment. It is document number one behind your herring tab. I'm going to point out a few things in the document just to clarify a few things, but in general, I think what everyone needs to understand today is that we're approving the scoping document so that we can begin scoping on this amendment, and the council's approval of the document is really not specific approval of the exact word-for-word language that's in this particular document right here. There's always a little bit of wordsmithing and editing that goes on afterwards based on the discussion that we have at these meetings. What you're approving today is the goals and objectives that we're going out to scoping with, which I will go through that are in the document, and also the general issues that have been raised in the scoping document that we're seeking public comment on. Something to keep in mind during this discussion is that we have a large number of comments from the public on the actual scoping document and the language that should be included in the scoping document, the questions that should be asked to the public, and things like that. I'm, for the most part, looking for guidance from the council on what to change or add to this scoping document. So I need to hear from you today if there are specific suggestions on what to add to the scoping document in terms of questions to consider, things like that. And there's a lot of comment letters in the binder that you can take a look at if you have some thoughts. I'd like to hear those today. The scoping document is structured very similarly to most of the documents you've probably seen in the past for most of our actions. And the idea is to essentially start scoping as of tomorrow, once the document's been approved and I have a chance to make any final changes or edits to it based on guidance from you today. The scoping period for this amendment will go through the end of June, essentially to June 30th, and during that time, we will have opportunities for the public to provide scoping comments during the upcoming herring meetings. That includes an opportunity at the beginning of the herring advisors meeting on April 30th. The next committee meeting is scheduled for May 22nd. There will be an opportunity at the beginning of that meeting for the public to make scoping comments. That meeting, since it's being scheduled and it will occur during the scoping period, is not going to be a meeting where there's going to be a lot of action taken on the amendment. There's going to be more, that meeting is going to be more of a review of information and kind of getting everybody up to speed on the status of the stock and the fishery and things like that, as well as some discussion of the scoping comments that have been received so far. And as Frank mentioned, we're going to do a scoping hearing at both the June Mid-Atlantic Council and New England Council meetings. Anyway, that just kind of summarizes where we're going to go with scoping. The most of the introductory language in this document is very similar to what you've seen before. I want to just point you to page 3 of the document, what specific issues will be addressed in the amendment. There is a list there that was approved at the committee meeting of goals and objectives for this amendment. Everybody kind of recognizes at this point that the goals and objectives may change as we go down the road and start developing some of the more specific management alternatives. But this is the list of goals and objectives that the committee recommends that we go out and scope for public comment on as potential issues that are going to be the focus of this amendment. The goal, obviously, is to develop an amendment to the herring plan to improve catch monitoring and ensure compliance with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act of 2006. And then you will see 5 objectives that were approved by the committee. A couple of comments on the objectives that you may want to consider. The first one, to implement measures to improve the long-term monitoring of catch in the herring fishery, is something that this council has already identified as a primary focus for this amendment, as well as number 2, which is to implement ACLs and accountability measures consistent with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act. At the committee meeting, objectives number 2 and 3 were initially brought to the committee as one objective. That's reflected in the meeting summary. The original objective was to implement ACLs and AMs and other management measures to ensure compliance with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act, I believe. The committee did decide to split that into 2 objectives. The part that says the new provisions of the Magnuson Act was something that was added, that I added into the goals and objectives to clarify some of the discussion that we had at the committee meeting. There seems to be a little bit of confusion about this, and there's some comments from the public about this issue. There's a little bit of confusion as to whether or not the committee intended on going out and scoping for measures to ensure compliance with the Magnuson Act, meaning all elements of the Magnuson Act and everything, the national standards and everything else that the council actions are always required to comply with. My understanding, and I believe that this is also the case for the committee members that I've spoken with at least, I believe this was clarified at the committee meeting, that really the focus is to scope for comments on measures to comply with the new provisions of the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act. We did clarify at the meeting that that really was reflected things like LAPS, the use of SSCs, and the implementation of ACLs and AMs. If that's not the case, I would like to hear from the committee members, and we can certainly strike the word new from the document. I did circulate this document to the committee members before circulating it to the council and the public, and I did not get any comments to the contrary. And everyone I've talked to seems to be clear that the intent was to scope for issues related to the new provisions of the Act. But if that's not the case, then we can certainly clarify that today. And there does seem to be a little bit of confusion about that. There's some comments from the public relative to that issue. So that's something to think about as well. And relative to the last objective, number 5, to address the health of the herring resource and the important role of herring as a forage fish and a predator fish throughout its range, This was a objective that was added by the committee at the committee meeting, and we did have some discussion last week at the hearing plan development team meeting about the goals and objectives of this amendment. I just want to note that the PDT expressed some concern about this objective because there's a lot of concern about whether or not this is going to be a measurable objective and something that we're going to be able to potentially develop specific management measures in this amendment to address. The PDT has some concerns about whether or not we can analyze whether or not we can analyze our effectiveness of accomplishing that objective and our success with meeting it. I just want to note that concern. It's something to think about. Also, the PDT feels that this was something that was addressed in Herring Amendment 1 to the extent possible. There's not a lot of new information since Amendment 1 has been developed, so the PDT is really unclear exactly what this objective means and what the intent may be relative to things that are going to be done in this amendment and management measures that are going to be considered in this amendment. That's something to think about. Other than that, the document starting on page 4 goes through the major issues that the council is considering taking action on this amendment, the first one being the catch monitoring program. That's discussed on pages 4 and 5. Page 6 addresses the ACLs and AMs, and page 7 has some discussion about limited access privilege programs and the sector allocation process. Right now, for labs and sectors, the committee has left the door open to consider any form of limited access privilege program or sector allocation process in this amendment. Nothing's been taken off the table yet, and the scoping document includes discussion and questions related to both sector allocations and things like IFQs or potentially other measures, other forms of LAPS. So the committee kind of left that one open for the purposes of scoping, and we've formulated a list of questions around that issue. On page 8, you'll note that the committee has recommended, and it is included in the scoping document, that allocations for the purposes of LAPS or sectors utilize landings history from Area 1A based on a time period that ends December 31, 2006. This was a motion that was made by the committee and was just folded right into the scoping document. So approving the scoping document includes approving this recommendation. It's not binding, of course. The committee is, we've structured it in such a way that we're just going out saying, we're looking for comments on this date. This is the date that we're considering for ending history for the purposes of allocations. And the reason for that is because everything in the fishery in Area 1A changed in 2007 with the implementation of the limited access program and the purse-seine fixed gear only area. A lot of boats lost access to Area 1A during some important times of the year, and the committee felt that for the purposes of allocating quota for sectors or for IFQs, that it would be more appropriate to use history from the time period before that happened versus the time period once the boats lost access to that area. Other than that, the rest of the document describes the amendment process and how to comment. Like I said, there are a lot of comments in the binder about the scoping document. These aren't really scoping comments because we haven't started scoping yet, but these are comments about the document that I'd like the council members to think about, and certainly I'm looking for guidance on any changes or additions that should be made to this document before I finish it up and send it out for scoping. Thank you.
Yes, we have a committee motion. Karen's got it, I hope. To forward the draft scoping document as amended at this meeting to the council for approval at the April council meeting. If I can, Mr. Chairman, Once that's up, Lori is correct. When the committee approved this motion, it was with the understanding that she'd be able to wordsmith it and put the committee's intent into it. My recollection is the same as what Lori had, and if anybody else on the committee had a problem with it, they didn't make it known after Lori distributed the document, so now would be the time. But that is the motion. I will say, after this motion, there's another motion coming up to address a concern that the MID had. And the reason we did it that way, because this motion addresses the three things that the council told the committee to work on. And the next motion will be something outside of that, so we did it separately. Thank you.
I had a question for Lori. I think you referenced the PDT was confused about a portion of the scoping document. Is that right?
At last week's PDT meeting, we did review the goals and objectives, and the PDT expressed concern about objective number 5 from the standpoint of being able to evaluate management measures specific to that objective and to really measure whether or not we've achieved that objective. You know, the PDT looks at it from a more analytical standpoint, and there's just some concerns that it may not be a very measurable objective.
Well, I don't think that's a requirement, whether it's analytical or not. Thank you. Anyone on the council? Dave Simpson.
Yeah, I think a lot of the discussion was just sort of trying to emphasize the importance of herring and in its role as a forage and as it was brought up there, as a predator species. You might also add as a competitor species for things like sand lance and what their overall ecological value is to seabirds, marine mammals, and everything else. So I guess I was looking to ask Lori, how much of that kind of information is developed, brought out in the original amendment, you know, there for the public to read and for the council to consider when actually taking action? Because I tend to agree with you. There isn't too much here that, you know, the PDT could analyze to in terms of developing management, specific management measures.
In Amendment 1, we did try to do a lot of work to put together the available information on that particular issue, and one of the appendices for Amendment 1 is a white paper that we put together that is entitled something like The Role of Herring in the Ecosystem or something like that, and it does detail all available information about what herring eat, what eats herring, and all, you know, sort of a summary of all of the available studies and literature relative to that issue. It was also brought into the amendment in terms of special emphasis on things like the specification of optimum yield and things like that. We also provided in Amendment 1, information about how herring consumption by predators is factored into the stock assessment and things like estimates of natural mortality, the estimate of MSY, and then how that relates to the specifications. So Amendment 1 sort of laid out all of the information that we have and really emphasized that this is an important issue that we need to continue to consider. The PDT discussion last week, we really talked about whether or not there's more information available, and at one of our upcoming PDT meetings, we are going to have some discussion and an update from the Science Center about work that's been done in this department, in this field, and in ecosystem management in general. All of that information obviously will be brought into this amendment as new background information about the fishery and the resource. I think that the PDT was just not really sure what was meant by that objective in terms of what's going to be done in this amendment. You know, the amendment was really developed to focus on catch monitoring and ACLs. So the question was just raised, well, you know, why is this being added as an objective to this amendment, and what does the committee mean by that in terms of what might be done in this amendment?
Dave. Yeah, with that in mind. I think really it was being brought up because everyone wants to keep this kind of issue at the forefront, but I don't really see that there's a lot to be done in terms of analysis that isn't going to be brought forward anyway. So with that in mind, I'd offer the an amendment to the council's motion to the committee's motion, that is, to remove item 5 from the list of objectives to go to scoping with.
There's a second. Dana? Rice, seconds. Nancy?
As far as the issue about ecosystems and herring are concerned, we actually have been doing quite a bit of work looking at herring and trophic dynamics, particularly as related to tunas. And there's a really strong interest, obviously, in terms of the interaction between herring and trophic dynamics, between upper and lower trophic levels. And so we really in fact, I can think of a paper that was recently published by Bill Overholtz and company from the center very recently that describes or is organized around the hypothesis about herring and the trophic dynamics with tunas. And there's a very strong interest even within the international community relative to this. And so there probably has been quite a bit done over the last year and a half, that in fact does include some analytical work looking at trophic dynamics and particularly herring as a forage, prey item. So I guess my view is that it's important. We're working on it. There's been quite a bit of work done on it in the last couple of years. And I think, it's going to be something that is going to be very high, I think, on people's interest list, particularly through ICAT and some of the international management bodies.
Dr. Pierce.
As to the motion, well, first of all, we all know from our discussions relative to Amendment Number 1 that sea herring have a critical role as a forage fish, and they have an extremely important role as a predator fish throughout the range. So that's a known, that's a given. And that was made very clear to us from all of the public hearings we had on Amendment Number 1, from the appendix document prepared by Lori and others on the contract, the involvement of the plan development team. So it's known. The committee hasn't given us anything, I don't think, in the scoping document that would relate specifically to this suggested objective. And I can say that because I go through the scoping document and I see specific sections of the scoping document broken down by objective, it appears. Catch monitoring program, annual catch limits accountability measures, limited access privilege program, sector allocation process, and then that's it. There's no section here that relates specifically to that fifth objective. So it doesn't seem, therefore, that the committee knows what it wants to do relative to this particular objective that it's recommending we put in the scoping document. So I would support the motion, at the same time acknowledging that this particular issue that is critical to us will be addressed potentially through the second objective, which is to implement annual catch limits and accountability measures consistent with the Magnuson Act. For example, we may eventually decide through public comments, scoping comments, and at other times that to deal with this already well understood concern of ours, we might want to implement annual catch limits that are lower than they otherwise would be, or we'll put in place accountability measures that will address this particular issue. I don't know how this is going to end up. Everyone's got their own views regarding how we should proceed in this regard. So I want it understood that this objective is important to me personally, to my agency personally, and I intend to pursue it through under the umbrella of what we've already done through Amendment Number 1 and, of course, through the process that we've already established for the setting of annual catch limits and accountability measures. So I support the motion.
Pat Kirkham.
If we don't leave this in, how are we going to figure out what we do have and what we need to answer some of these questions in the future? I think we need to leave it in.
Sally McGee and Terry.
Yeah, I hear everybody saying that this is important, so I'm a little baffled as to why it would be removed, aside from the fact that there aren't specific questions posed in the scoping document for the public to consider. I think that modifying objective number 5 to read something like, in the context of objectives 1 through 4, to consider the health of the herring resource and the important role of herring as forage fish, et cetera, so that we're not losing something that it sounds like everybody is in agreement we need to be considering in the context of this, the herring amendment and the more specific and measurable objectives. But number 5 needs to be something that's considered along with each of those 1 through 4. So with that, I would offer a motion to substitute that objective 5 read, in the context of objectives 1 through 4, to consider the health of the herring resource and the important role of herring as a forage fish and a predator fish throughout its range.
There's a second. Seconded by Dave Preble. You done with your rationale? Terry, did you want to comment on the motion to substitute? Mike Larry, I had you next. Did you want to comment on the motion to substitute? Excuse me? You're on the list.
This is the same thing, the committee. We went back and forth. We actually spent about 2 hours on this. And it is a scoping document. I think it's important to leave it in there to get the comments from the public and see where we go from there. It's only a scoping document. So we could leave the public on again and we just cut everything back out in October and business as usual.
On the motion to substitute, Dr. Pierce.
Well, I'm not going to repeat my previous comments. However, I will draw the council's attention to the section on annual catch limits, accountability measures, and questions to consider. And the fourth bullet says, how could the council better account for the importance of herring as forage for predators in setting ACLs? So I would suggest that we could just incorporate the sentiment, the logic regarding the importance of herring as prey, as forage, and, of course, the predator aspect of this into this particular section. I think it makes a lot more sense, and it gives the industry something more to focus on, because as I said before, there's nothing in this document that indicates what in the world we are offering up as a means to deal with that specific objective. In addition, I still insist that whenever we use the word to address the health of something, it gives us nothing to chew on. I don't know what that means. To address the health of the herring resource, are they sick? It's about abundance of the resource, what's available for harvest and what's out there to be available as a forage fish. I mean, I'm not going to follow my sword regarding this. I just want a scoping document that is easy to understand and makes sense and doesn't complicate matters and that doesn't draw attention away from the principal issues here that we have identified at a previous meeting. I don't want to get lost in the forest because I did this. I got lost in the forest on Amendment Number 1 when I went to public hearings to deal with the measures for Amendment Number 1. The discussion was almost entirely devoted to forage, which is, of course, important. But there were other issues in Amendment Number 1 that needed comment. So the comments that I think we're seeking principally through the scoping document relate to the monitoring of the catch, landings and bycatch in the herring fishery, and also, of course, the ACLs, the accountability measures, and, of course, an allocation process. So that's my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, that I don't support the motion to substitute or, of course, the motion itself.
So just so I'm clear, Dr. Pierce, you're suggesting that what you think the intent of 5 is will come out in number 2 through the ACL and AM discussion.
Exactly, because it all relates to how much fish should be removed from the ocean. That relates to the ACLs and the AMs, AMs that could be somehow linked to our concern about forage, for example, or our concern that herring can be major predators of, you know, reproductive products of gadus, for example. So I don't want to complicate matters and focus the public's attention on another issue that we've already focused on in a rather dramatic way through the Amendment Number 1 process. Let's key in on what we're attempting to do, and that is, again, the ACLs, the AMs, and the catch monitoring.
Okay. I just suggest maybe there's a middle ground where you could beef number 2 up, combining 2 and 5. But Dave Preble?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The problem here is, well, first of all, I agree with Mike. This consideration of the role of the herring as forage fish and predator fish has to underlie all of the other four. So Dr. Pierce's approach, I have no problem with that either. I would have supported the original motion to eliminate it, but I still think I agree with Mike that it needs to be in there in some form. What bothers me is that to address, and Dr. Pierce sort of alluded to this, the verb to address should not be in there because it's an objective, and you don't address with an objective. The other objectives, the verbs are to implement, to develop. Those are things you do. To address doesn't give you, just like trying to grab a hold of Jell-O. So at the very least, the wording of number 5 is poor to begin with, and it needs to be changed. And I think that Sally's change is acceptable, and I think that what it does is it says that we want these considerations to underlie all of the other objectives, and that's something I can agree with.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, I'm actually okay with the motion to substitute the way it's worded, because really I think it's saying what the herring plan has said all along. This is a very important issue. It will be a fundamental part of everything we do in herring management. And, you know, my motion to eliminate it was, as David Pierce said, to try to maintain some focus here on the ACLs and AMs and the major things that we're trying to do, the monitoring, and hopefully not lose a lot of time in the emotional aspects of this, which I think, you know, maybe are inevitable anyway, but I didn't want to heighten them. Because we will spend a lot of time on it, and so I'm okay with it. I'm also remembering that, you know, we've done a lot of things with the ecological role in mind. Just last year, we cut 1A by 15,000 tons. So I think our track record speaks to the seriousness of this issue for the council. And it was an 8-7 vote to do sea herring over whiting. It was a one vote margin. And I'm hoping that whiting doesn't linger too far on. And the more that's in this, the longer it takes for us to get back to whiting. So that's in my mind as well.
Thanks, Dave. Laura?
I just wanted to clarify a couple of things about the information that will be provided in this amendment. As Nancy indicated, the Science Center has been doing some work on some ecosystem things, and particularly focusing on herring. Bill Overholtz is a member of the plan development team, and we are planning at one of the next meetings, I don't know if it'll be the next PDT meeting, but one of the next couple ones, Bill is going to give us an overview of what research has been ongoing. And I just want everybody to be clear. I mean, that information is going to be folded into this amendment regardless of whether or not this objective exists. Everybody, including the PDT, recognizes that this is a critical issue. And, it just can't be ignored. It's one of the major biological and ecological issues relative to herring. Going through an amendment and developing an environmental impact statement includes updating all of the available information on the resource and the ecological considerations. So all of that information is going to come into this amendment in one way or the other for everybody to take a look at, and will be available as part of the environmental impact statement.
I'm about to call the question. Anyone new? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. Having been through the first herring amendment, I think I think our scoping document should be much more focused. The last time we went out and scoped on everything under the planet, and that's what we got. You know, I think we should stick to the meat and potatoes and stop trying to get the kitchen sink, the stove, and everything we need to cook them. So I don't support the motion. I think this is essentially a political question. You're going to get hundreds of comments from people who say, oh, you should reduce the herring catch, or no, you should leave it the same. You're not going to get any what I would consider to be useful information. Useful information is hard science. I think this is a question for the Science Center to answer. I don't think going to scoping is going to get you any objective information. I would rather have this question answered by our scientists. They will provide us with the guidance that is necessary to set the ACLs and the AMs based on this whole idea of forage and how much needs to be set aside to satisfy it. Same with the predator aspects. They will answer that question. They will tell you that a biomass of X amount of herring is going to eat X amount of zooplankton of varying kinds. And amongst that will be a number of your important fish species. So I, you know, I think we should remove this. I think we should stick to the very clear, achievable objectives so that we get useful comments and we can get moving as fast as possible. So anyway, I'm not going to support any of these motions to keep this in.
Anyone new? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the opportunity to listen in on the committee meeting in Portland, and I was prepared to support the original proposal. While I'm in hopes that we're going to ultimately focus this amendment to just a couple of issues, I think it's important to go to scoping. This is a politically and emotionally charged issue. I'd like to hear the public's comments and then begin the culling process. And to the points about the brutal honesty of what we can and can't analyze, I think, will be readily apparent through the scoping process, and that's the time to be time well spent.
Terry, Dana? Jim?
Yes, I'm opposed to the substitute motion, and I would have supported the previous motion. I think this is a science question, as previously stated. Thank you.
Ready for the question on the motion to substitute, and all those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? 5. Any abstentions? Motion to substitute carries 11 to 5. Now we're on to the main, what is it? Main motion is substituted? Anything further? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, regarding the goal statement, to develop an amendment to the herring FMP to improve catch monitoring and ensure compliance with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act of 2006. I asked the committee if it gave any consideration to having as part of the goal allocation of the herring resource, because there's a major section here related to sectors and laps. Perhaps the objective should read to develop an amendment to the herring FMP to improve catch monitoring, allocate the herring resource, and ensure compliance with the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act. Is that a more honest depiction of what this scoping document is attempting to do, that is, get information regarding allocating the resource? Again, I'm asking for some insights that perhaps that the committee can offer up relative to that particular aspect of the scoping document.
Dr. Pierce, we still need to vote on the motion to substitute. The motion to substitute is now the main motion. We need clear that up, and then we can come back to your discussion on the goal of the amendment. Anything further? Jim Roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think part of the discussion at the committee meeting put a lot more emphasis on the role of heron as a predator than we've ever talked about before, and I know for a fact that there's some new information out very recently about menhaden and the unintended consequences of the abundances of menhaden in different areas, and how the larvae consumption of other fish that has been documented now is quite alarming to some. So I think there was a reason. I don't know what publication that is, but I know it's out. I don't know if it's been peer-reviewed, but it's fairly high level, and that's what discussion at the committee was to look at it from both sides, not just one. So that was part of it.
Gene, let's go back through. We had a motion to remove alternative, what was it, 5? Then there was a motion to substitute. So does that mean that the motion, when the motion to substitute passed, it simply amended the main motion from? Back on the main motion. Dr. Pierce, I apologize. Back to your goal discussion.
It's all right, Mr. Chairman. Again, relative to this particular motion that involves our
Okay, I was right. I was wrong. Now I'm right again. Okay. I'm still thinking about skin on, skin off. All right, anything further on that? Does everyone know where we are? We're back on that change to alternative or objective 5. You ready for the question?
Let's make sure we have a motion on the board that's right.
Lori?
So does the motion to substitute then become the motion to amend? So you're voting on the same motion again?
Yes.
Okay. So that... So you're voting on the exact same motion that you just voted on.
Correct.
To make it part of the main motion.
Correct.
Okay.
Skin on or skin off, Lori? Okay, everybody clear? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eleven. Opposed? 5. Abstentions? Motion carries 11-5. Okay, Dr. Pierce.
Okay.
Let's start over on the board discussion.
Well, if we're going to have a major section on limited access privilege programs and sector allocation process, and if we're going to include all of these questions, the 10 or so questions that relate to allocation, then why not make it very clear in the scoping document that that's one of our goals, to allocate the herring resource. But before I make any motion, I would appreciate the chair of the committee's perspective regarding whether or not this is the intent of the committee, that is to have that as a recommendation to this council that this new action would involve allocating the herring resource.
Well, I think that the goal was the monitoring. That was the original goal of why we started the amendment. And the fact when you get down into the allocation, I'm not sure that was one of the goals that the council approved originally. The goal was the monitoring. And if you could monitor it through the use of, we may get back from public comment and we don't want sectors or allocation. So it would be hard to say that you're going against one of your goals because of the comments. The goal was the monitoring. We may choose to use allocations and sectors and whatnot, but the original goal is the monitoring of the resource.
All right, thank you. That clarifies it. I agree that was the original goal, and I don't want to complicate matters. This particular goal and the objectives that follow from it are critical as part of our next effort to deal with management of the herring resource. Catch monitoring, what's being caught, what's being discarded. That's clearly the major intent of this council. So I'm not making any motion to change the goal. I just wanted to get a clarification. I've now gotten that. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
I say also, Dave, inherent in ACLs, when you set an ACL, I think you'll see in the guidance that it'll, and we've already seen some presentations that the council can break those ACLs down and give a certain allocation to recs or to states or to bycatch and other fisheries like we saw yesterday. So it is inherent in setting an ACL that you can look at allocation. So if you want to be up front, it should be very clear to everyone that, you know, we will start looking at allocations if the industry wants us to and the council wants to better achieve staying under ABC.
Jim Alden?
Yes. Well, Dr. Pierce talked about allocation, and I think I'll lead in. My question is that the council is considering LAPPs or sectors, and they're basing it on an allocation period ending December 31st, 2006. Then it goes on further to say, but we may pick another date or any date, or it doesn't matter. My question to the committee chair is, where did December 31st, 2006, and if the following after that says you can pick another period, and I'm wondering why we're picking a date at this stage and not just leaving it open.
I think as Laurie stated, that's the date that everything. Laurie, say it better than I will.
Well, the committee, the committee felt that 2007, with the changes that were implemented in Amendment 1 and the potential for access to Area 1A, well, not the potential, the impact of Amendment 1 and the access to Area 1A being affected for a lot of vessels, that it probably wasn't fair to use that as one of the years for allocating history. The reason it's worded the way it is in the scoping document is because the committee doesn't want to make that decision ahead of time, and it is a little too early in the process to be making a determination specifically which dates will be used for allocation, but the committee wanted to scope for public comment specific to that date and suggest it to the public as something that we're leaning towards.
Yeah, I think I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I think we ought to let the public and the scoping have a clear understanding of that it's more open. And I'd like to make a motion to remove the date, December 31st, 2006, and let it go to public comment without a specific date.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Paul Howard.
Along those same lines, Mr. Chairman, that bold type that says the council is considering requirement that any allocation of herring for a sector or another LAP utilize landing histories from 1A. So I don't know if the intent is not to do sectors or allocations to the other areas, but certainly that might be envisioned that way. So, you know, my read of this general goal of develop sector allocation process and limited access program should not be fine-tuned in this, that if, you know, it shouldn't be only 1A and only history. It took us, you know, usually when you're going to do allocation, it's going to take a long time to develop the qualification criteria to be as fair as possible.
Frank, Laurie, the discussion at the committee meeting, did it focus specifically on allocation in 1A?
In terms of this specific date, it did, but it still remains to be seen, where the allocations may be made. And there's a question in the scoping document, should the allocations be made to all management areas or by management area? One of the things that came up in the discussion at the committee meeting that we're going to have to think about is how do you allocate quota in areas where the quota has never been fully utilized. Area 1A is the only area in this fishery where the quota is fully utilized, and we're going to have a lot of difficulty coming up with an allocation scheme for the other areas. So the discussion was really specific to 1A relative to this date, and it's the only area where access to the fishery may be affected by things like that pristine fixed gear only area. But it still remains to be seen what areas may be subject to an allocation program. That's kind of still open.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, remember, this is a scoping document. It seems to me if there's some consideration being given for using this date, then it makes a lot of sense to let the public know that and to specifically seek comments on it. It doesn't mean that you have to settle on this date. It's just that you want to alert them to the fact that this is one of the possibilities that's under consideration.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer Pat's concern, I think that was significant discussion at the meeting, and the reason that we suggest utilize that date is because of, one, the action to prevent the midwater trawling in 1A was only implemented in 2007. So you, if you don't at least acknowledge that there have been some significant changes to Area 1A as far as eligibility or allowance of different fisheries in there, that was the purpose. And and Lori touched on it too. We don't know down the road if this is going to be an allocation system that utilizes landings from all areas or just one. But because of the disenfranchised fleet that was that fished up until 2007 in 1A, it needed to be acknowledged that the allocation would be considered for that area prior to that restriction taking place. So that was the rationale for it. It was just that one sector of the fleet has been removed from participating in the prime part of the season, and that land is the information needed to be provided to the public to make that decision. That's where it came from.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, if you listen to this conversation, you'll see some of the problems that I have with this amendment. We just did a huge hearing amendment, and it took a tremendous amount of time, and it was a good effort, and it hasn't been in place much more than a year. Now we're doing another one, and when we started, when this hearing amendment was voted above the line. I don't think it was the intent of the council at that time to use it for an allocation of fish. And I'm afraid that this is where it's going. And I understand fully that we need to be as broad as we can when we go out and ask the public for comments in scoping. But I hope that we don't, the Herring Amendment 4 doesn't take as much time as Herring Amendment 1 did. I think we need to deal with monitoring, and we need to deal with ACLs and ACMs, obviously, because the Act tells us we got to do that. But I think we want to be very careful not to front-load this so that we create a huge document. And yesterday is a prime example of why I don't want to see this happen, which is a very healthy fishery with a very small number of boats. And yesterday we went through all kinds of pain and grief. We have an industry that is trying to do the same thing, and we don't have time to address their issues. And quite frankly, it just bothers me tremendously that we have people in one industry that are starving to death, and we can't implement sectors or allocations to save them, and that we're running headlong and taking up time and effort of the council and everybody else in an industry that doesn't need it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not clear to me from the language and the discussion we've had whether the highlighted language about the requirement that any allocation of herring for a sector or another LAPP be utilized landing histories from 1A, is the intention of that to say that the entire herring resource will be sectors within for all areas will be based on what activity was done in 1A in those years, or is it sectors for 1A will have this criteria for sectors? In other words, I can read that to mean we have sectors and Area 3 will be divvied up, the sector allocation will be based on whatever was done in 1A in those years. And I don't think that would be the intention, but that's what it looks like to me from the language.
Lori?
Well, none of the details have really been discussed yet, but I think, I think just what the intention is that if we go down the road of sector allocations or LAPs and we do utilize landings history by management area for whatever form of allocation program is developed, that the period for that utilizes history from 1A will end in December 31, 2006. Beyond that, it's like I said, it's still not clear whether we're going to end up doing allocations for the other management areas or just for 1A. But whatever we do that is utilizing history by management area, the intent would be to only utilize history through 2006. I don't know if that really clarifies anything or not.
Well, it doesn't clarify it in to me in terms of if this is intended to send out a message to the public of an indication of what we are thinking, then I just think it needs to be worded more precisely. If because 1A is the only area that is fully utilized at the present time, for 1A we are thinking of doing it on this basis, and for other areas we haven't thought of a method yet, would be more clear. Because what this seems to indicate to me is we're saying the other areas aren't fully utilized yet, but we're going to set up a scheme to allocate that into sectors, your sector proportion, based on whatever you did in 1A. And, I mean, I don't think that's what we mean to convey, but that's what it seems to say to me. So I think we just need to, if the intention is to clarify the portions that we have some inclination of how we are going to do it, then we should make it clear, not make it worse. Thank you.
I think we should focus back on what we're doing and why we're doing it, and not have all the debates that I think we'll have if we start talking about allocation. The primary focus of this action is to focus the public on commenting on the goal of the amendment, which is to develop a catch monitoring system in this fishery. There are other objectives that are listed, 1 through 5, but the primary reason that the council made the decision to take this action, to start this amendment, to write this scoping document, is to focus the public on catch monitoring. I think, or I'm concerned that discussions on LAPP sectors and other allocation schemes will slow down or distract the council from getting the best possible catch monitoring system it can on this fishery. And it was commented on when we decided to put this above the line in November that having a catch monitoring system will actually enhance the ability of the council to consider and actually ultimately allocate this fishery. So I just offer those comments up to try to put things into perspective. But to the motion on the board, there's a motion to remove a specific date out of the scoping document. Anything further from anyone on the council? Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your last comments, I think, is part of the concern that generated this action. If, in fact, we implement a better monitoring system, and in 2 or 3 years determine that we are going to do ITQs, I don't even want to say sector anymore because there is no such damn thing, say ITQs from here on out, if we don't at least recognize that a segment of the industry was disenfranchised from 2007 forward, then that allocation process is skewed. And that's exactly what we're saying. That I don't know when or if any kind of an LAPP is going to be implemented in Herod. And it wasn't to suggest that it was to create it now. It was just to make people aware if there's a completely different monitoring system comes in that is accurate to the ounce of what fish are caught, that it be recognized that one segment of the industry was disenfranchised since 2007. That was the point, Mr. Chairman. You touched on it exactly, the concern that was raised. Sorry I didn't express it more clearly. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll digress a little bit. The reason that I would just as soon see this go out of there is I agree with what you said. You put it beautifully. But to Jimmy has a point, and that was at the committee. That was the committee's conversation. But if you will leave this date in there and we could go down this road, which takes us away from the focus that you're trying to lead us back to and where we should be, there is going to be a whole segment of the industry that's going to react instantly and say, wait a minute, the 5 years prior to that disenfranchised me. So it's going to create a whole argument that we don't need in this scoping document, I think. I think that's somewhere down the road, and that is the reason that I would just as soon see that this date be taken away, because it's going to create conversation and people are going to be posturing for something that in this amendment that we shouldn't be using this amendment for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, to your points, Dana, it's my intention Once we come back from scoping, to direct the committee chair to focus exclusively on the monitoring portion of this document until they finish that section or until we have to break to do specs. If you look at the timeline, there's a natural break in the timeline to work on specs. But the entire time the committee is working is going to be on the monitoring portion of this scoping document and this amendment. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 4. Opposed. The motion fails. 1 abstention. Okay. Dr. Pierce.
All right. Back to the main motion. I think, where are we, Mr. Chairman?
Let's check with Gene.
Correct. Have we gotten the scoping document and whether we should approve it or not? Correct. With this language. All right. I would like to include in the list of questions regarding annual catch limits and accountability measures, and maybe some text that I haven't got to offer at this point in time, but this is critical, I feel. It's also critical to the industry, certainly critical to us. We're talking about ACLs, we're talking about AMs. Let me indicate the kinds of questions I would like incorporated. First one would be, how should the council account for Canadian catch of Area 1A herring in the setting of ACLs and AMs? The next question would be, what process can be established to improve the U.S.-Canadian interaction regarding the setting of ACLs and AMs? And to carry it a bit farther, because the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission is very much involved in sea herring management, we have the chair of the sea herring section directly across from me, Terry Stockwell. I'm a member of the section. Doug Rauch is a member of the section, certainly in New England, and there are Mid-Atlantic Council or Mid-Atlantic State representatives as well. ASMFC has to be involved in this process in a more formal way because we're talking about ACLs and AMs, setting quotas, and the states control what's being landed we have an influence on what's being landed by way of days of fishing, spawning closures, and other things. So I'm very, very much interested in our having some further discussion through the scoping process, if need be. Maybe it's not necessary, but I'm suggesting perhaps it should be if we're talking about interaction with other managers. Another question would be, how should the council improve interaction with ASMFC for the setting of ACLs and AMs? Right now, the committee meets by itself with no interaction with the sea herring section. In the past, the sea herring section was present with the council. We'd have joint meetings and make decisions together. Made sense, still makes sense. I see the potential for conflict down the road if the section is not included. The reason why I highlight that is that the section is not comprised just of state directors, the principal marine fisheries official from the different states. We have legislative appointees, we have governor appointees, and as it stands right now, they're pretty much disenfranchised from this process because they're on the outside watching what happens here at the council level. So in the interest of improving our interaction with ASMFC and the Canadians, I'd like those three questions or questions like them included as part of our discussion through the scoping process of annual catch limits and accountability measures. Now, I can make a motion to that effect if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, to have those questions included. Okay.
Why don't you check the language to make sure it reflects
what
your motion is.
So how should the council account for Canadian catch of Area 1A herring in the ACL and AM setting process? The second question would be, what process can be established to improve U.S.-Canadian interactions regarding the setting of ACLs and AMs? And then finally, how should the council improve its interaction with ASMFC for the setting of ACLs and AMs? So that's my motion, Mr. Chairman, to include those questions in the list.
Is there a second? Who wants it? Doug? Doug Grout? Paul Howard?
I was going to say, I've already mentioned to Laurie, John, and Pat, and the council can probably weigh in on it, but we do have a TMGC process on cod haddock and yellowtail, and I'm going to ask Pat to institute that, you know, for herring as well. We've talked about it at the U.S.-Canada TMGC, and I think the timing is appropriate since we now do joint stock assessments with the Canadians through the track, and it's time now as that New Brunswick fishery has increased that we start negotiating over ACLs, if you will. The second point, so that's one way that we're going to address that. The second thing is there are some things that our policy and our, I don't know, administrative in nature, and there are some that need public input. I don't know if this is one that is something that we do as a administrative and council body, or does the public really need to have input to? So as you talked about focusing on this amendment, I don't know if this takes the focus away from it.
Pat Kirkle.
I'm going to oppose the motion. Not that I don't think these are important questions. They are. I just don't think they're – I think they're questions that this body needs to be addressing, not that we should be sending out to the industry.
Lori.
Just to clarify so that everybody's on the same page, the ACLs and AMs that need to be addressed in this amendment relate to the Magnuson Act reauthorization and really, as far as I can tell, are somewhat more procedural than anything else in this amendment. There will always be the fishery specification process where the quotas are set in conjunction with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. Our fishery specification process where we set the numbers is something that we do with ASMFC. Just so that everybody's clear, that's still going to occur. What's going to happen in this amendment is that the language in the plan is going to change to make it more consistent with the Magnuson Act. You know, some terminology is going to change, and we may be considering some things like accountability measures. The ASMFC is not subject to the provisions of the Magnuson Act, so I'm not sure that the ASMFC plan needs to change in terms of terminology and things like that. But just keep in mind that the specification setting process is something that's separate and will always occur in cooperation with the ASMFC.
Anyone else on the council? Dana, then Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very briefly, I agree with the sentiment and the thought behind this, but I support us doing it wholeheartedly, but I don't see it involved in the scoping document. Thank you.
Terry Stockwell.
Ditto. I absolutely concur with each one of Dr. Pierce's points, but I'm concerned what kind of input we might actually, meaningful input we might get in the scoping document. I'd almost think that these questions were better posed to either the committee and or the executive committee.
Anyone else on the council? Rodney.
Yeah, I feel the same way, including these questions. They're good questions, but it's going to take us further away from our goals.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Five. Opposed? Motion fails. 5-11. Anything further? David?
Yeah, actually, it's a question for, I think, probably for Gene on the catch monitoring program section, page 4. We discussed the SBRM a fair amount. That's subject to a lawsuit now. Do we want to notify the public that comments will be considered in light of the outcome of that lawsuit, or do we have any obligation here to discuss the fact that it's under, you know, it's the subject of a lawsuit?
No obligation.
No obligation?
I mean, there's no legal obligation, if that's what you're asking me.
Okay, so if we get a bunch of comments and then we get a result of the lawsuit and it renders the comments either irrelevant or moot or whatever, then
that's way over kind of anticipating hypotheticals, I think. I don't think you have to worry. You can put in here that it's subject to a lawsuit, but I don't think it's appropriate and certainly not required.
Anything further from the council before I go to the public, before the final vote? Anyone in the public? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Pam Lyons-Gorman, and I'm with the National Coalition for Marine Conservation. Thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to comment on Objective 5. We wrote in support of Objective 5 and supported that and supported the committee's work on that. However, it seems that with the list of supporting questions, you're limiting public comment to under Objective 2. That's currently only where the forage questions are. But as I read through these email comments that are in the back of the packet, a lot of those email comments relate to more spatial and temporal considerations about the role of herring as forage and would not be addressed in the setting of an ACL. So I encourage the council to reconsider that decision and to put in some specific questions in support of Objective 5. Thank you.
Yeah, to that point, as Lori indicated when she began her presentation today, depending upon what the council does, any modifications it makes to the document may trigger or require some editing. So I think that's a fair point to the council. Now that you've, if you pass this, now that you've amended number 5, do you want to recommend specific questions or direct specific questions to that point? Do you want to leave it up to staff to do that? Think about that as we go back into the public. Lori?
Relative to that, I'm taking guidance from the council in terms of whether or not to add questions. I mean, I'm not going to go back unless the council tells me to go back and add questions and gives me some direction on what kind of questions to add. I'm not going to make the decision on my own to go back and develop additional questions or anything like that.
Unless we ask you to.
Unless you ask me to.
That's right. Anyone else in the audience? Mr. Libby?
Gary Libby, Midcoast Fishermen's Association, Port Clyde. Number 2 was one of my things that I had in mind here, that we do have a tax system in this fishery. They do have a quota. And I was wondering the difference between an ACL and a TAC, and the AM could be shutting down the fishery when neither was met. And as far as the sector allocation goes, it's a long process, a difficult process, time-consuming, and I'd like to see language in it that talks to gear type, if this was considered, i.e., persane only, because we want the herring fishery to catch them all that they can, but we don't want them to tow midwater gear and disrupt the herring resource so they don't bunch up and they drive the ground fish off and there's a bycatch problem, and we could go on and on and on. And the part of 5, I think your suggestion about moving it in part of it up into 2 might shorten up the workload. And I thank you for the time to speak.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin from Winterport, Maine. I'm representing Ocean Spray Partnership, the fishing vessel Providian, and New England Fish Company out of Portland, Maine. And I think the forage issue has been addressed in Amendment 1. It's obviously going to stay in here. That's fine. I just came to the microphone, really, to see if there'd be any opportunity for the council to have a presentation about Dr. Overholtz's paper that he just published with I can't think of his name now, the ecosystem guy down there, Dr. Link, yeah, because that paper is really on point here, and we, this Forge First campaign is emerging not only around the management issues in herring, but also in menhaden. I work with Omega Protein, and we've heard a lot about localized depletion and the value of menhaden as forage. We had a presentation from the Forage First crowd down at the Mid-Atlantic Council on mackerel. Dr. Overholtz's paper addresses this head-on and discusses how the last assessment actually, in fact, considered doubling the natural mortality estimates that we've used historically in herring from 0.2, which is about 18%, to 0.4, which is about 33% of the stock. In other words, M1, which is natural mortality from forage, represents only about 33% of the stock that's out there on an annual basis. The fishermen get about 15%, and then there's another 45% or something that's out there to create surplus production. So I think if the council was able to see that work and understand it, this issue goes away. In fact, this fishery is very well managed conservatively, and that's really why I came to the microphone, to see if there would be an opportunity for this council to perhaps read that paper carefully and then have a presentation from Bill, because from our perspective, the forage issue is addressed. When you get into the localized depletion issues, I don't think we're ever going to talk about delaying this process. You don't want to delay the process to establish allocation. Well, in my experience, we've been talking about localized depletion in the Gulf of Maine and herring fishery for almost 25 years. With no resolution. Similarly, in Chesapeake Bay for the last 5 years, after $5 million of research money has been spent, there's been no definition even of what localized depletion in the Chesapeake Bay means relative to menhaden. So, we have always historically managed based on the advice from the Science Center in terms of how these resources are used in the ecosystem. And Bill's paper is an excellent paper, and I commend it to the council for their understanding and review. Thank you.
Gib. Then Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Laurie, for providing the clarification on the objective number. I guess it's number 3 now. My question comes from that. If the objective is to only look at the new provisions of the Magnuson Act, can there be some clarification or some further language in the scoping document that will find a place for other concerns? One of the goals of scoping from 1999, NIMS put out a document that said the goal of scoping is to identify the concerns of the affected public. And so if, under the ongoing obligation of the council to address all of the elements of Magnuson, say somebody has a question about one of the national standards and finds a deficiency and can point out how this FMP is deficient, is there going to be a place in this FMP at the end of scoping to address that, or is the committee going to rule that that's out of the scope of this action and be able to not take action? This happened on Amendment 1. We pointed out some issues that needed to be addressed in Amendment 1 and had to continue over and over again to take it to the committee, take it to the full council, and get those issues addressed. When on the first pass, the Herring Committee said, that's out of the scope of this action. We're not going to take action on this one. And there were some valid concerns that have shown that there was some utility for it. Bycatch caps. The haddock bycatch cap came. That was a proposal that we put out there. The gear restrictions as far as bottom-tending mobile gear, the modifications to the definition of the trawls, those were originally ruled out of order of the scope of the document, even though they were valid Magnuson concerns. So I'd like to just have something in this scoping document that says if there is some way that this FMP is deficient, that the committee will consider those. I also have a question. I don't know whether this is the time for it. The discussion on Tuesday about the EFP for the GMRI's EFP for the herring fishery, I have a question to ask about that, and I don't know whether this is the time or when later on in the herring discussion.
Actually, we that was on the agenda, and we passed through it, but there is an open period for public comment at the end of the day.
I'll take it up under that. Thanks very much.
Greg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, council members. My name is Greg DiDomenico, Garden State Seafood Association. I guess I have a question, and perhaps the council can clarify whether or not a particular issue is going to be added to the scoping document and put out for public comment. At the committee meeting, I believe it was the 25th of March, a motion was made and carried unanimously during that committee meeting to recommend that the council also consider alternatives to address concerns about potential herring discards on mackerel vessels in areas 2 and 3. This is a serious issue that I've brought up for almost, well, during the during Amendment 1, and also wrote a letter about a year ago to Mr. Howard. And at the time, what we were really asking for was, of course, two things. That another analysis be done to take a look at the potential and the actual herring discards, shouldn't say discards, herring bycatch in the directed mackerel fishery, and to also, again, have the council take some action to address that issue. The problem is, of course, that many vessels in New Jersey did not receive an adequate permit with an adequate possession limit through Amendment 1 for herring. They fish for mackerel. Sometimes there's some mixing. It happens from time to time. It has happened since Amendment 1. Essentially, the possession limits are too small for them to adequately comply with the law. It's the last thing we want to have happen, and we don't want to discourage mackerel fishing, the mackerel fishery, for any vessels, of course, while, you know, having this issue basically, hopefully, not tie them to the dock. I would ask if the motion from the committee meeting is going to be added to the public scoping document.
Right. Yeah. Well, I can't guarantee that it's going to pass. The next motion after this is to address that issue. So.
As always, thank you, Frank. Always.
Thanks, Greg.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Captain Buddy Vanderhoop. I'm a Wampanoag Indian. I've run a corner Wampanoag herring run for the last 36 years. And these midwater trawlers have been pretty disruptive to the fishing industry as a whole. It slowed and depleted the alewife run in New England to all-time lows in numbers. And herring as a whole, alewives, blueback, sea herring, are a forage fish. Every major big game fish from, all the way from whales to bluefish, tuna fish, striped bass, everything eats herring. And you take away the forage fish, you're just going to take away a lot of the fish will move out of the area in search of fish to forage on. So another pretty bad thing that happens in the fall with where these midwater trawlers are fishing, the striped bass migrate south in the late fall. And in the last 3 years, I've noticed acres and acres and acres of dead stripers that have been caught by these boats and just kicked out the scuppers because they can't take them, sell them, or anything like that because they're a game fish, of course. And I think that something should be done on the lines of where they fish during the time of the striper migration, because you know, we worked really hard to get the stripers to come back, and now they're killing them in numbers that are just totally ridiculous. So I support the monitoring of these vessels, and objective number 5, the forage fish thing, I think is a very important thing to take into consideration. Thank you very much.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Beth Tooley, Small Pelagic Group. And as everyone can see, these issues surrounding herring are very emotional. People have a lot of opinions, and it seems like we're already moving into the public comment period for scoping, and that's not really what we're here to do today. We're here to approve a scoping document and move it forward, so I would just suggest that the council do that, and let's not be taking, you know, public hearing comments. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Heard some suggestions from the audience. Is anyone prepared to make a motion to amend or modify the document before we take the final vote? Lori.
I have taken a few notes on some suggestions for clarifying the language in the document. Mr. Salisbury's suggestion on some of the language to clarify what the December 31st date actually may mean and things like that. So I do plan on making a few revisions to the document, and I will circulate it to the committee members one more time before finalizing it.
And to the point about alternative or whatever, the number five. Number five now reads in the context of 1 through 4, so from the public's perspective, the questions in 1 through 4 can be viewed through the forage predator lens, I think. So I don't think you need to develop specific questions or section for that. Anything further from the council? Gene.
I just make one editorial suggestion. In is to explain that this document was developed and drafted based on what are essentially pre-scoping activities, actions from the council and from public comments, because we're really scoping in a sense. I know there's been some complaints that we're somehow curtailing scoping activities, but I think just in that first sentence of where I would suggest that it would go would be just in the first page where you discover, you say why the very first section there, the last sentence. I don't have it in front of me right now. But just to make it clear that we've scoped the scoping as well. Under your comments are invited in that second paragraph, perhaps the last sentence. You know, this document was drafted and developed and drafted based on council actions and public comments.
Got that, Lori? Yeah. Thanks. Anything further?
John.
Nancy.
One of the, Jeff Kalin made the comment that perhaps the council would like to have a presentation by us and specifically Bill Overholtz about his work and his paper, and we'd be happy to work with the council to schedule that kind of a presentation. It is a what-if kind of paper, and it does pose a lot of hypotheses, and it probably would be of interest, so we could work on that.
Thanks, Nancy. We'll look for an appropriate place to have that presentation. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen opposed? One. Abstentions? Motion carries 15-1. Frank?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Greg already stole most of my thunder, but we have there was another committee motion. And to recommend the council also consider alternatives to address concerns about the potential herring discards on mackerel vessels in Area 2 and 3. I think Greg already gave the rationale for it. The committee put this outside of the scoping document because it was something that was outside of the committee charge, so that's why it's done this way. It would have to be added back to the document. There's no language describing it because Lori would have to develop that. This was something at the end. We received a letter from the Mid-Atlantic Council, I believe. I think it was prior to the committee meeting, addressing their concerns about the mackerel fishery and the discards and the boats that didn't qualify under Amendment 1. And that's what I have.
that.
That was a committee motion?
That's a committee motion.
Discussion. Dr. Pierce, then Jim Rohl.
I had assumed that this particular issue could be dealt with under the annual catch limit and accountability measures by adding another question, which would be along the lines of how could the council better account for bycatching discards of herring in the directed mackerel fishery, as opposed to our putting a new alternative in. I could go either way, but as I said, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's already covered under the ACL and the accountability measures section, provided we can focus the public's attention on this important issue of what's happening in the mackerel fishery.
Jim Rohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to disagree with the good doctor over there, but the fact is this is a permitting issue. And these vessels that we're talking about, it's not a very significant number of vessels, but they just fell a little bit outside the qualifications and didn't receive any limited access permit for herring. So all they have is the incidental catch, which is 3 tons, I think, something like that. So what we're trying to make the point of here is that there's a concern for discards in a high-volume fishery like we've got. It is an issue. So we're talking about at least an opportunity to revisit this issue, and also wanted to bring up that the mackerel limited access program that is being developed by the MID has already taken into consideration of, for example, the bait fishery here that takes primarily a herring fishery but has incidental catches of mackerel. What we're going to do with that, and hopefully what we're going to do, is issue permits to every boat, but then place them boats in different tiers. There'll be no need for qualifying years. There'll be no need for the agency to determine who's in, who's out. We just give every floating vessel a permit. Then we'll monitor and control that through the tiers that they are applied to. So we understand that, for example, with the bait fishery, the mackerel were never culled out. They were sold right along with the herring. And it would be very, very hard for anyone to document their specific landings of mackerel. We're taking that in consideration. We're trying to provide an opportunity for these boats to land some minor amount of mackerel and not have to go through all the baloney of the discards or worry about the violations. All we're asking for here, Mr. Chairman, is an opportunity for this issue to be discussed in this upcoming amendment, not knowing when there'll be another opportunity. Thank you.
Jim, you describe it as a permitting issue. The vessels you're talking about qualified for an incidental catch permit. Is that right?
That's the only permit. They have no limited access
permit.
So they're, it's an incidental, isn't it, Lori? Isn't that the title? Or
Lori, can you provide a little background?
The Amendment 1 limited access program has two tiers, one tier being the quote-unquote directed fishery permit that had a higher level of landings required to qualify, the second tier being a limited access incidental catch permit. That permit was designed to accommodate vessels primarily in the mackerel fishery who may not be catching enough herring to qualify for the directed fishery permit. They still had to qualify, but if you recall, we went back and extended that qualification period back to 1988. And lowered the poundage to try to capture these vessels. The limited access incidental catch permit has a trip limit associated with it of 25 tons. If vessels don't qualify for the limited access incidental catch permit, there is an open access incidental catch permit that allows vessels to catch 5 tons per trip. The problem that is being, or the concern that's being raised, is for vessels that would not have qualified for either of the limited access incidental catch permits. So these are vessels that can get an open access permit to catch 5 tons per trip, and the concerns being raised that that amount is not adequate. But these vessels didn't have enough landings to qualify for the next tier up, which would have been the 25-ton permit.
Jim?
I'm not going to try to disagree with Laura. She knows this thing in and out, but I think 3 ton is the allowable allowance. It's not three. It is 5,000 pounds.
It's 5 tons, which is 11,000 pounds. At least that's the way I wrote it in the amendment.
Jim Alden?
Yeah, I support the motion that we need to look at it and figure out the issue. It makes no sense to me to be dumping fish and not even coming close to catching the TACs in Area 2 and 3. It just doesn't add up to me. So it's a good motion to at least get it looked at and try to figure out if there is a solution.
Okay. Question then, if this goes in, goes up, we vote it up, is it in the scoping document, or is it just something we're going to consider when we come back? That's a decision for you, Council. Dana?
My suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is it doesn't go in the scoping document. It's something we consider when we come back.
Rodney?
I suggest the opposite, that it does go, so we get feedback from the industry, just how many boats are there.
Frank?
If I can, we've got a clarification here. You want to read it?
Sure. Just to clarify the possession limits, a limited access incidental catch permit, they're authorized to have up to 55,000 pounds or 25 metric tons. And then the open access herring permit authorized up to 6,600 pounds or 3 metric tons. Sorry.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I'd like to see what the public's response to this is. We're providing this to reduce discards. I mean, it's one of the goals of all of our plans, and if there's significant objection to it for whatever reason, if you don't feel like it'll delay anything to do as far as inclusion in the public, in the scoping document, I would suggest leaving it in there. I'd like to see what people think about it. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, because I have great affection for the Mid-Atlantic Council and Jimmy Rule in particular, and mackerel issues as well, I'd like to include it. It's an issue that has special importance, I suspect, to the Mid-Atlantic Council, so let's acknowledge that and keep it in.
Paul Howard.
Just the thing that got me going was that it was a permit issue, and I don't think we want to go back and revisit all the limited entry, but I think we might be able to revisit that if you have this permit, we want to raise the trip limit. That could be very simple, especially since we're now catching the tag.
To keep things clean and honest, it would be helpful if we, in the motion, say that this is going into the scoping document, to be added to the scoping document. This just says we're going to consider it in Amendment 4, and I don't want any miscommunication. I want to make sure that the Council's intent is to include this issue in the scoping document for Amendment 4, or not. Jim Salisbury.
Well, I would urge you to put it in the, specify that it is in the scoping document, because I think if you're contemplating putting it in the amendment, you ought to get whatever comments you can about it in the scoping, and the purpose of scoping is to tell people what you're thinking about doing. If we're thinking about doing that, we should put it in. So if it's not considered by a friendly amendment, I would amend it to add that it be included in the scoping document.
I guess it is a committee motion. If there is an objection, we can modify the language instead of going through the process of amending and several votes. Is there objection to adding language to saying we're going to insert this into the scoping document? Okay. Laura, you object? Sure.
I obviously don't object. I was just wondering, it was the committee's intent to add it to the scoping document if the motion passes. I'm just looking for a little bit of guidance on how to add it to the scoping document. I mean, obviously I can sort of frame the issue and describe what the concern is, describe the trip limits that do currently exist, because obviously we all need a little update on that. I can't keep them straight myself, but is this just an add-on to the end of the document, like here's another issue? The only thing I'm wondering is how it relates to the beginning of the document, which is what issues are we going to address and what the goals and objectives of this amendment are. Or does it just go on to the end as other issues that may be addressed?
Off the top of my head, not having thought much about it, one of the things that's been suggested is a way to minimize bycatch or discards, or to minimize discards. So the council's considering perhaps increasing the trip limit allowed under that permit. Question could be, to what level is, what's an appropriate level? Things along that line, and I think it ties into the, you know, the overall goals that any amendment needs to follow, which is MSRA.
Okay, to that point, should the discussion then just focus on this particular issue, or are we scoping for ways to minimize discards in for other things?
I think just to this issue, it's a very specific issue. You know, part of the reason we're building this monitoring program is to identify other areas or other discard and catch issues that may exist. But this is an issue that's been brought to our attention by our sister council. We've had some discussion about it, and I think, you know, we'll take the vote to see how the council feels about it. But I think that would be the type of guidance that would be helpful in the scoping document. Frank?
Yeah, I think we have to account for it in the ACLs anyway. So I think under the ACL section, I mean, if they're going to be discards, you have to account for them. That's the perfect place to put it in.
Karen, could you in the motion put for inclusion in scoping document for Amendment 4? Okay, thank you. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fourteen opposed. One. Abstentions. One abstention. The motion carries 14-1 with one abstention. Dr. Pierce.
Committee doesn't have any action, further action on Herring. I have a motion I would like to make. All right. This council has given C. Herring priority. That was a decision made not too long ago. Moved it up from below the line to above the line, and I agree with that action. In light of that, I reflect on what the regional administrator said yesterday in a report. I think Pat said that at the current time, the NRCC hasn't given Herring much of a priority. It's low priority, so I'd like to make a motion that we request the NRCC to give C. Herring high priority and request the establishment of a TMGC-like process for pelagics, that is, C. Herring and mackerel. I can elaborate a bit if someone seconds it, Mr. Chairman.
How about dogfish, too?
No. Well, it is a pelagic now that you mention it. But no. That's a different beast altogether. I don't want to muddy the waters.
I can't get you to bite, Dr. Dog. Okay. Is there a second? Dave Gaethel. Okay. Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, let me clarify what I hope I said anyway. The NRCC, a while back, I can't remember how long now, had identified, well, this is actually a lot more information than I said yesterday now that I think about it. A while back had identified five species as priorities for beginning discussions with the, not for beginning discussions, but for consideration of discussions on transboundary management issues with the Canadians. And herring was one of them. And in fact, herring was the highest priority. So the Canadians agreed to those five species. And typically, the next step in any kind of transboundary discussion process is to be able to jointly agree on the science. And so we went ahead and established the joint assessment process, the track process for herring. and so now have the joint assessment process for herring. So in fact, we're further along with that species than any of the other four. Although dogfish and mackerel are next year. And after the assessment was concluded, and as you know, we actually went through two rounds before we agreed with the Canadians, came to some agreement on a joint assessment with the Canadians. After that was concluded, we got back to a discussion of whether or not there was interest in the U.S. in pursuing transboundary management discussions. And at the time, anyway, the general feeling was that there was no longer interest among the industry or the council. It was more, we're going to continue the track process, but at the time it did not seem that people wanted to take the next step, so we didn't push it with the Canadians. If that's changed, we can certainly start sending a different message to the Canadians, but quite honestly, it takes a very long time to get any movement out of that process. So.
Thanks for correcting that, Pat. That's my recollection as well. If there is an interest on the part of the U.S. industry to re-engage the Canadians, then I'm very supportive of doing that. So, anything further on the motion on the board? Paul Howard.
Mr. Chairman, I think one aspect of it is the industry's interest. The other aspect is the council's interest, because when setting the ACLs, if the Canadian catch keeps going up, we're going to have to take it off ours. It's exactly why we entered into cod and haddock, was to develop a sharing agreement so that we can meet our mortality objectives and we can have a fair and equitable transboundary management system of allocation. So whether or not the industry wants to participate, I think in setting ACLs and stuff, this is something that we ought to consider.
Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed, abstentions, one abstention. The motion carries 14-0 with one abstention. Anything further on herring?
The only thing I had was the timeline, but seeing how we're already 17 minutes over on our timeline, it's in the binder if anybody wants to look at it. That's okay. All I have.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Lori. Take a 10-minute break. Hey, if everybody could take their seats.